So we've heard for a couple weeks now in reading number 2 from the letter to the Hebrews, this ancient and beautiful text. We're not quite sure exactly who wrote it, but we know that it was circulated widely in the first century of the Christian years and made its way into the scriptures, a piece of inspired text because of all it has to say about the transition, you might say, from the old temple to Christ as our new Passover sacrifice, among all kinds of other things in the letter. So we hear it this Sunday, and then one more time next Sunday, and then we move on to another letter. And the thing about ordinary time Sundays is reading number 2 doesn't really go with the other ones. It just kind of, we pick a reading and we roll through it in pieces, and then we pick another one. So it's usually often kind of skipped over, if you will, in commentary, especially in homilies. But for today anyway, I'm just going to spend some time on that second reading because it's really beautiful and really interesting and very tricky and I think kind of challenging. And what it attempts to get at is one of the great mysteries of life that's been with us since the beginning of human history, and it is this: it's the problem of suffering. Why is there pain? Why is there things that are difficult? Why is there, frankly, death at all? This is the challenge of the world. And if one looks at the entire Bible from start to end, if you think about it on one level, it's a book about suffering. And how does one react to it appropriately and with the eyes of faith? Because there are lots of ways to handle suffering, some better than others. I think maybe we can agree. So Hebrews today, in this one little piece of it that we have, just a few verses, lands on this topic from one single particular angle. And there's 1,000 angles to it, okay? Today is only one. But that's the topic anyway, so suffering. So what follows, I guess, this morning by way of homily, just a couple of points on suffering as this reading from Hebrews tries to get us to understand them. Just a few things anyway. First thing to note, and this is a fact that we shouldn't just skip over because the reading, I suppose, really does reinforce the point, and it is this: it's that in this life, okay, suffering is unavoidable. There is no avoiding suffering in this life. This is a lesson that we've known from Judaism way back in the book of Genesis with the story of the fall and the apple and the tragedy of Eden. It's in truth throughout the entire long Jewish history. Certainly it's true in Christian teachings all the way until this day. So we know that in our cosmic world, as beautiful as the world is, as graceful as it is, as lovely and full of blessings as God has made our beautiful, beautiful world, it is a tainted world. It's fallen. Suffering is the fault line that runs all the way through it, and it culminates in death itself. So these things cannot be avoided. And suffering takes lots of forms. So obviously it's physical. We feel this in our bodies, our aches and pains, you know, having the flu, having a cold, whatever. And then death itself, obviously, so there is that. Suffering is also from things like sin and from evil. There is injustice around us that impacts us negatively. Things in the world that we know are not right, and they cause us anguish in the face of what is disordered in the world, in ourselves and out there. There's emotional suffering, too. There's losses and there's hardships and broken relationships and challenges in marriages and friendships and communities and social unrest. So it's everywhere around us. And it can be something as simple and small as waiting in line at the store and using those ridiculous self-checkouts at Walmart. That's suffering right there, let's just be honest. And something as grave and serious as war and Ukraine and killings around the world. So all of that is on the scale of what's inconvenient and brings us pain in this life. The reading would not be in the Bible if it wasn't the case that suffering is unavoidable. It's in the scriptures to remind us that this is a fact of our lives. The thing of it is that I think for most of human history, we kind of got this intuitively. Nobody, I think, in their right mind for many, many centuries would have thought, I can create a suffering-free world. And the handful who did think that were kind of shouted down as fools in public discourse. They were almost made fun of. People just knew death was inevitable and suffering came. And we worked against it. We had advancements in technology and medicine and things. We've always tried to chip away at it, but everybody kind of knew it was just there. I think in our current world, we don't deal with it very well at all. If there's one of the challenges of the current moment, it's that we have gotten so, so good with all of our medicine and in particular, I don't know-how of the mechanical world and everything else, that we've just sort of realized and decided that suffering is something we can probably put money on and get rid of it. We can medicate away. We can legislate it away. And we almost get surprised and annoyed that in our current world, bad things still happen. Like we're shocked when there's an accident when there's a tragedy, when there's this, where's that, and they're hard things, but it shouldn't surprise us. So I think the current world probably deals with suffering less well because we've gotten so good at pushing its boundaries back. We just don't handle it like we should. We're almost like annoyed that it exists at all, and we have the illusion that if we just legislate enough or make enough policies or have enough money or this or that, we're going to get rid of it all. And the fact is, the Christian says no, in a fallen world, there is no fixing every problem. Something will always be not right. And a healthy person understands that and knows one's limitations about how one deals with it. So as an opener, okay, on the topic of suffering, it's there in lots of forms, and we just know that as believers. It won't have illusions about getting rid of it. We're not going to get rid of death. We're not going to get rid of suffering. It's here to stay until the Lord comes back in his fullness. So there's that in the reading right off the bat. It wouldn't be in the Bible if this wasn't a fact. The second thing that we can pick up from the reading about the topic is this, is that suffering, I suppose you could say, makes us ask deep questions that are very hard. It really, really shakes us to the core, doesn't it? And it's easy to, I think, forget how to handle suffering. How does the reading open? It says, you have forgotten what I told you. You've forgotten what I taught you. So that tells us that even way back then, 2,000 years ago, for much I got done saying about the current suffering issues, no one has ever dealt with suffering well. It's never been like an easy thing to process. So our author wouldn't have to start by saying, look, you forgot what I told you, if it was a piece of cake. We need constant reminding. So this is a topic that needs reminding, and why? Because it does shake us pretty hard. So we ask questions, right, when things happen to us. Why am I being punished? Where did this come from? Why did I lose my job? Why did I get cancer? Why did I lose my spouse or my child? Why is there a mass killing or a war or this or whatever? We have all these questions. And maybe our faith is shaken. Does God care? Does God love me? Is he punishing me for something? Would a good God allow things like this to happen? These are the deepest questions of human history. And I think among the most fierce critics of Christianity and Judaism have always been those who have said, if you tell me how you can believe in a God who allows suffering, we just can't get past it at different points in the human condition. So questions about us, about life, about God, it raises all these things up. So as the author tells us, it's easy to forget when we are suffering how to handle it well. So we shouldn't be surprised if it's hard. Suffering is not easy. It's never been. So, as some preambles then, okay, fine. How do you handle it? What is the Christian response to suffering? Thousands of pages have been written on the topic. I will not give you a full essay this morning. There's a million things you could say about it. But at least from the reading's perspective this morning, the one slant on it, which I think is helpful, goes kind of like this. And bear in mind there's more, but this is at least a piece of it. So first of all, a Christian says, okay, and the reading is trying to get at this if one kind of rephrases it a little bit, when suffering hits me or you of any sort, we can acknowledge it's not pleasant to go through. That's honest and that's true. Nobody likes it. And the reading points that out. Nobody likes getting disciplined. Nobody likes hardship, so that's a fact, one. Two, though, what the author, the ancient inspired author, wants to think about is that there really is a loving God who is our Father, who has a plan for us, and his plan includes suffering. That's kind of what the author is trying to say. We have a loving Father. He knows us. He watches us. There's a plan for us, and his plan includes suffering. That's not the same thing as saying he punishes. It's not the same thing as saying he causes, but he does allow. He permits it. Why? Because in God's plan for us, out of love for us, he knows that some lessons in life are only learned by suffering. And in our plan, in our prayer, in our approaching God, in our hardship, we had to be able to say to ourselves, I know there's a God, I know that he loves me, and he's allowing this for a reason. I don't always understand what it is, I'm not enjoying it, I don't want to go through this, and yet I trust that because I'm going through it, I'm going to grow from it, and when I'm through it, I'll look back and realize why it had to happen like it did. There was a plan. God knew it. I didn't. Looking back on it, I will see it in its fullness. That's what the author's trying to say. He's trying to make a comparison to parents. He says, you know, what parent is not going to bring discipline to a child because they know that some things you're only learning when you have hardship. God is a parent, and his plan is perfect, and he loves us. So the goal, I suppose, taking this inspired text as our guide, when we experience suffering of any kind, be it at Walmart or bigger things, whatever it happens to be, is to say, I don't know that I necessarily understand this, I'm not enjoying this, but I do accept it, it's part of the plan, it's good for me, it's growing me, and maybe one day I'll see why it had to be like it is to make me into the person that God wants me to be. So it's about trusting in this plan. And God's going to allow us to suffer over and over again, and frankly, it's our entire life, until we finally are really, really intuitively good at just trusting him and not fighting against it all the time. So that's what Hebrews is trying to say. So suffering is real. It's always been there. It's going to be there. And there are better and worse ways to handle it. An unhealthy way is to struggle against it. A healthy way is to see it as part of a plan and realize that in God's plan for me, it has a place. It's mysterious. I don't always understand, but one day I will realize why he wanted this to happen to me. But it's a great test of faith. It's a huge test of faith in a loving God and a plan of God and to make me trust God more deeply than perhaps I otherwise would. But I'm not going to trust him, frankly, until I have suffered. That's the lesson of faith over and over again. Now, having said all that, okay, here's the thing. That's a nice point, and I agree with all of it, and it's academically accurate, it's theologically sound, it's true. Everything about my life, things that I've gone through that have not been easy, I've looked back and went, yeah, now I know why I have to go through that, so I get it. And when I'm going through things that are hard, it's a great act of trust on my part to say, God, I accept this. I'm doing this because it's good for me, even though I don't enjoy this. So, all true. But the thing of it is that I'd say most of the time in life, okay, there is more to the story about how Christians respond to suffering than just textbook answers. They happen to be right. But if I'm facing something that's hard or difficult, a loss, either out there in my heart, something emotional, something physical, oftentimes I don't want someone telling me the textbook answer. It doesn't make me feel a whole lot better. It may be accurate, but it is not necessarily very soothing at the time. So at the base of all of this, which is not in this part of the reading, but it's in the rest of it that's around the text and the parts of the letter and the scriptures, is this simple fact, I suppose, that you could say. How does Christianity respond to the problem of suffering? It's always been like this. It's to say, pointing to the cross, that God enters into it. He's never far from it. He's in the midst of it. He's in the thick of it. And the Christian God, unlike any other God in the history of the entire world and universe, is one that has not been afraid to enter into our space of suffering. That's what the cross is all about. God could have, I suppose, stood back from a distance, folded his arms, looked down and said, well, you deal on your own. I'm the mighty God, and you're the lowly little people. That's not how he handles it. So what he's trying to tell us is, you're not alone in your suffering. Someone's with you. Someone knows. Someone's in your place. Someone's in your heart. Someone's in your mind. Someone's in your life. God says, I've come into your world as one of you. I know it from the inside out. The worst thing about suffering is suffering alone. God says to the Christian God says, you're not suffering alone, humanity. I become one of you, and I'm in the thick of it. How is that manifested to us? It happens through a community. It happens through friendships and through families and through the bonds of human love and charity. So what are we supposed to do when someone's suffering? We do what God does with us. We are present to it. We're supposed to sit there. We're supposed to listen. We're supposed to wipe away the tears. Let somebody cry. Let them vent. Not offer neat, tidy answers all the time. Just take their hand and just quietly sit there with them while they are in their own kind of pain. That's what it means to be with somebody in their pain, because it's what Christ does for the world. He entered into our world to give us an example to follow. As I do, he says, you do. You see suffering around you, sit with it. You see pain around you, enter into it. You hear cries around you, listen to them and be attentive to them. As I have done for you, you do for others. At the end of the day, better than the textbook answer, that's all that helps us get through pain, knowing that we're not alone in our suffering, that someone's there to suffer with us, and alongside of us. That's the ultimate Christian response to human suffering. Or, as John Paul II put it once upon a time in a great letter about suffering, suffering exists to unleash love in the world. As we see it, our hearts should be torn open and reach out to people with compassion. That's why God allows suffering, to let love be unleashed and flow in abundance around us. So, does that answer all the questions? No. The suffering's still hard? Yes. It's the worst thing in the world, right? But as Hebrews wants us to understand, it does have a plan, a purpose, a point. It takes us somewhere. It's a part of life that's supposed to grow us. We don't enjoy it, but we know that we need it. And then when all the textbook answers fall short at the end of the day, Christ cries to us on the cross saying, I am with you in your pain. And may those around you be with you in your pain too, so you're not alone in the darkness and hardship of what is suffering and difficult in this life. Last point, I think that this is not just academics, right? The thing of it is, in this day and age, I don't think that the modern world suffers very well. Our patience is thin, our attention spans are short, we have all the stuff at our fingertips, we're rarely deprived of anything anymore, we get whatever we want, and we just flip out when things don't go our way. I'm being one of them, too. You all know that I don't handle suffering always very well. This is the way it is. So I think in a world that's kind of forgotten what it means to offer it up, to accept things patiently, and to accept that suffering is a part of life rather than always chafing against it, the Christian community has an important obligation to be a counterexample, a counterwitness to a world of another way to handle what's inevitable. When pain comes, how do the Christians handle it? I hope better than a non-believer. We ought to be able to say, I understand what this is for. I don't like it, but I'm with the Lord on the cross. He's with me. We're with each other in our community of friendship and charity. We take care of the sick. We bury the dead. We are the ones who suffer well, so the world can learn to suffer well too. We have that to teach the world today in a place that doesn't understand this anymore. But we do. We do. So praise God for the gift of the scriptures, for this letter to the Hebrews, which is just one tiny little angle on a huge, huge, huge issue in life, right? But it's so enlightening to understand what God is doing, what it's for. He is our Father. He does love us. And his plan for us includes suffering. And when it happens to us, we can be confident it's going somewhere that it needs to go. And when all that fails us in our words and in our hearts, we have our neighbors around us to say, I am with you. And we always have the Lord to say to us on the cross, I know your pain. I'm in your pain. I've taken your pain. I feel your pain. We'll be in pain together so we can be in heaven, risen together at the end of the age. That's how one handles suffering in this life, to take us to the fullness of the next. So we are fortunate as believers to get these things in ways that our non-believing friends do not get. So may we suffer well, offer our suffering up well for the Lord, for the good of the world, that we'll understand the beauty and the power and the gift, what it means to suffer with and for the Lord in all things.